Good afternoon. Happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, January 27th. I'll tell you why it's special in a little bit, but it's special. Trust me. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports, part of Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. Global Patriot Radio, 7 shows over 7 days with 8 different hosts. I could explain that part, but let's do it this way. Every Monday, the Vito Esposito Show with Vito and Big Al. That's 2 on day 1. On Tuesdays, you got Eric with Radio Free Kafiristan. Both of them go at 6 o'clock Eastern time. So 2 days, 3 hosts. Wednesdays, me, Hank Jones, 5:30. 3 days, 4 hosts. See where I'm going with this? Thursday, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Paul goes at 7 o'clock, I believe. And that's 4 days with 5 hosts. Fridays, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday, also sometimes called Islam in Focus. There you go, 5 days, 6 hosts. Then day 6, which is Saturday for my purposes, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. So there you go, 6 days, 8 hosts. Now day 7. Well, you're thinking that it would be 9 or more. Nope. Eric is back on day 7 on Sunday at 3 o'clock Eastern with Real Interfaith Dialogue. Now, that one is not just, it's not a show you can just listen to. I believe you can listen, but if you want to take part, you've got to get an app so that you are not, well, so you're not nasty gramming, basically. That's the problem. I mean, it sucks. It happens, though. And Eric had that issue with some people going in and being really nasty. And so, no, not going to happen. Certainly not here on Global Patriot Radio. Hey, we don't censor, but we have class. Well, okay. There's 6 days of class, 7 days, meaning Wednesday, 7 days of shows, 6 days of class, 8 hosts, 7 of whom have class. How's that? Okay. That's that. Okay. We're going to get to the special part in a little bit. Okay. We got some deaths in the past week. One that Vito and Al talked about, Hammer and Hank Aaron. To me, he's still the home run king. 755 in his career. Barry Bonds, yes, technically broke it, but Barry Bonds was so juiced. Barry Bonds hit 500-something home runs, and steroids hit the other 200-something. Oh, and God bless Mrs. Hank. She's over in Hank Haven. She just sneezed, so I wanted to say God bless. God bless again, Mrs. Hank. Anyway, Hammer and Hank, you know, the guy dealt with, he was a true class act. He dealt with racism. That was a time, you know, that's what we dealt with in that time. He dealt with his racism, especially up to breaking the career record, where he got all kinds of stuff from people that thought it was a disgrace that a black man was breaking a home run record. Go figure. You know what, though? Even with the allegations against Bonds, Hank Aaron never begrudged it. He said 3 decades as home run king was long enough. No problem with somebody else breaking it. He still, by the way, is still the career RBI leader. He was just 9 votes short of being a unanimous Hall of Fame entrant. I'll tell you what, I would almost kill to see the identity of those other 9 idiots who did not vote him in. Morons. Anyway, he was 86. He died in his sleep. They didn't say much beyond that. But a true class act all the way, all through his career. I'll never forget watching his 715th home run. I believe Brother Tommy was watching with me. It was a Monday night. I pretty much, if I remember correctly, Monday or Tuesday night, it was called Vin Scully or one of those. I don't even remember. I think it was Vin Scully. I think it was like Monday Night Baseball, like when they'd have Joe Garagiola and those guys. Classic stuff. 2 guys ran out onto the field to run with him. They got pulled off. But just a class act, a sad loss, but an eternal Hall of Famer. Larry King, 87 years old. Now, he had been admitted. There's no cause, but he had been admitted to the hospital for COVID. What else? He was 87, noted talk show host, great interviewer. And perhaps his greatest interview, believe it or not, was being lampooned on The Simpsons. Frankly, we should all be so lucky. And then Gregory Sierra. Now, some of you are going to say, who's Gregory Sierra? Well, if you watched shows like Chico and the Man and Sanford and Son, he was on those. He was on Barney Miller. He was Chano, if you remember. One of the detectives. My favorite role of his, believe it or not, it was Beneath the Planet of the Apes. He died from cancer. He was 83. He was on everything from Falcon Crest to MacGyver to Miami Vice. I think Hill Street Blues. He even had a somber role on All in the Family. His character was a Jewish extremist who ends up becoming friends with Archie. And then at the end, it ends with him getting killed in a car bombing. And instead of the usual hilarities at the end of that show, it was replaced by just somber silence. Frankly, I've rewatched, not that episode, but I've rewatched that show. I don't know why I ever liked it. It wasn't that funny. It just wasn't. Again, though, my favorite role was one of the mutant nuclear survivors in Beneath the Planet of the Apes. One of those they lived under the ground. They worshipped the bomb, the Alpha and Omega bomb. I think he had, at most, if that, he had one line maybe. But he used his nod and his telekinetic power to overwhelm astronaut Brent, who was played by James Franciscus. I know, sounds weird. I love those Planet of the Apes movies, the original ones. The remake, meh, they're okay, but the originals were awesome. Tony Jones, no relation to Hank Jones. It was 54. He was a two-time Super Bowl champ with the Broncos, an offensive lineman. He was undrafted and then signed with the Cleveland Browns in 1988. Played four games with them. Then he went to the Ravens and then eventually joined the Broncos. He was on their Super Bowl teams in 97 and 98 seasons. No details given on that. And here's some interesting. On this day, 11 years ago, J.D. Salinger died. Now, he was the author of the favorite book of every preppy prep school student, The Catcher in the Rye. Great book. Now, he passed away in seclusion 10 years ago, or 11 years ago, in Cornish, New Hampshire. He was evidently a pretty weird dude from stuff I read, but I do love that book. It's a great book. And finally, this is why this day is so special. Happy birthday to my daughter. It is her birthday today. Even though she's several time zones away, your mom and I love the heck out of you. We are so proud of you. And we did get to talk to her. And her fiance made her a pretty awesome-looking Oreo cheesecake. So not a bad addition to the family later on this year. I got to say that. Hope it's your best birthday ever, honey. And may they get better each and every year. So that's why this day is special. Get some quick sports news. Gary Anderson. Yeah, he was a former head coach at Utah State and then at Wisconsin and then at Oregon State and then back at Utah State. He has, again, opted out of money that is contractually owed to him. Yeah, believe it or not, yeah. He was fired after this past season after Utah State began the season 0-3. He's owed $2.7 million or $900,000 a season. He turned away also any buyout or severance when he left Oregon State in the 2017 season. That was after they started 1-5. However noble as all this seems, he was also one who didn't leave under the greatest terms. When he left Wisconsin, he publicly complained about their high academic standards, saying there were kids he couldn't get admitted and ranked on the school. Go figure. I mean, in the Big Ten, as a Big Ten alum, we kind of do pride ourselves on the fact that your average moron doesn't just walk out and walk onto campus because he can play football. I know that's probably not the reality, but we sort of, Big Ten fans, try to pride ourselves on that. But yeah, he walked away from Wisconsin ranking on him over that. When he left Oregon State, he blew up local newspapers with a series of text messages berating his staff and the previous staff, including this beauty, said, "I hired the wrong beep guys, and we're still working our way through a bunch of recruiting years that stunk," which got 2 exclamation points. And he said, "It's year 3, which got only 1 exclamation point. And he said, "If these beeps can't get it right, I will not just say fire them and start over. That's not the way to go about it. If I beep it up that bad, I will take the bullet and ride off into the sunset. I will stay old school. I will not die doing this. Beep. Stay tuned." There's no real explanation for the difference between what merited 1 exclamation point, 2 exclamation points, and all those texts. Suffice it to say, the standards that Wisconsin requires are a little higher than Coach Anderson's standards for punctuation and whatnot. He also raised a bit of controversy back in October. Remember, Mountain West, like a lot of conferences, was late getting back to starting its season. I remember players across the country were opting out with the COVID-19. He said for his team, opting out was not an option. Topping it off with this beauty to the Salt Lake Tribune: if you opt out, you're not with us. That's kind of ironic for a guy who quit one place after two seasons over higher academic standards, then walked away in the middle of another season, blowing off his staff. I mean, so yeah, kind of a weird thing. But hey, you know, giving up the money, you know, he could press for it. He's not, so good for him. Ryan Helinski, his brother Tyler was the Washington State quarterback that committed suicide in the offseason a couple seasons ago. Anyway, Ryan Helinski is getting his career at South Carolina. He is transferring to Northwestern. Yeah, so Pat Fitzgerald is going the route that Brett Bielema sort of went at Wisconsin, bringing in graduate transfers for quarterbacks. He just had Peyton Ramsey from Indiana, now Ryan Helinski from South Carolina. Whatever. Way to go, Pat, I guess. I wish him well, but, you know, you kind of wonder why certain schools do it that way. Speaking of the Pac-12 with his brother, Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner, is out. He was there 11 years. He's going to end in June. They kind of make it sound like he's retiring or walking away. It also sounds like not totally. Basically, they say his pioneer efforts grew the conference, added new programs, blah, 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 added network parity with television. At one point, they say our television agreement was the most lucrative in the nation. Yeah, for about 12 seconds. Basically, though, he says he was in pro sports for 20 years, in college athletics for more than 10. So he says it's time to pursue other exciting opportunities, whatever that means. Basically, he admitted that in a meeting with the Pac-12 CEO group, that presidents and chancellors expressed a belief that a change in leadership would make sense. So good for him. He was the CEO of the Women's Tennis Association prior to joining the Pac-10 in 2009. He's only 56 years old, so he's been around a while for a guy that's only 56, gotten around a lot. So, yeah. To give you an idea, the Pac-12 revenue in the most recent full year was $32 million per school. Big Ten was $55 million. SEC was $45 million. Yeah, Big Ten, $55 million. I mean, that's well over what anyone else's is. So when you hear people say, oh, the SEC network or the ESPN, Big Ten still gets more. That's why you're seeing Big Ten schools raise their standards and frankly, upgrade their facilities, upgrade their own student on-campus broadcasting. John Miller is a guy I've talked about before. He started Hawkeye Nation. He left Hawkeye Nation. He's now getting back into it. He wasn't even gone a year, basically, with a Hawkeye-themed podcast. John had a show with Big Ten Network for a while. Unfortunately, it didn't last long, and it was nothing to do with John. It was his broadcast partner, who was an Ohio State alum. I won't say the guy's name because he's a nice enough guy, but he was not good, and it doomed the show. But John said, back at that time, John had worked, had been to facilities like ESPN and Fox Sports and others, and he said there was, in terms of first-class, top-rate facilities, nothing topped the Big Ten. And that's why. That's why you hear about the Big Ten network and their facilities. That's why they've gotten guys from ESPN. You know, that's why they've gotten guys that don't want to go on to ESPN. They stay home to be in their home conference. So that's why. But anyway, so Pac-12 presidents and chancellors evidently felt that despite his pioneering that he has been passed up by other conferences. Yeah. You know, we'll see. Good for him for lasting that long. Frankly, I wouldn't mind him coming to the Big Ten because I'm not real thrilled with the Big Ten's commissioner. Oh, what else is going on in sports? Well, they talk about here are the major issues that the Pac-12 faces going forward. Basically, you know, they started off, he got expansion. He added Utah. He added Colorado. But they still have a media issue. Some of it's not going to be solved. But television rights is number one. They had a 12-year deal. It runs through 2023, I believe. You know, they need a better commissioner. So I'm talking Gene Smith from Ohio State. I have a hard time believing that. But, you know, who knows? Well, if they go after him and make it worth his while. But they've struggled with distribution in their network rights. They came to their agreement. They were going to be carried by DirecTV. It never really came to pass. They basically, in that regard, another problem is this. Time zone. Now, some of you are in the Western time zone or Mountain time zone. That's great. My daughter lives in that time zone. We went out to see to see her and saw a Hawkeye game that started at 9 o'clock in the morning. I mean, the bar wasn't even ready to be fully open when the game was starting. Indy Hawk is in the chat room. He can tell you that's not a no-go. That's a no-go. You can't do that. Now, they did have a 9 a.m. game, local game this past season to try and drum up interest. But frankly, you lose that East Coast audience. And the West Coast audience doesn't really care about college football. I shouldn't say they don't care. A lot of them do, but so much other stuff. Yeah, see, Indy Hawk chimes in on the chat room. Won't work. It absolutely will not work. Having done a lot of tailgates with Indy Hawk back in our day when we were a little stronger, maybe, let's put it that way, 9 a.m. Central Time was our start for 2 o'clock afternoon games. So 9 a.m. games aren't going to cut it. Noon games aren't really going to cut it. People on the East Coast aren't going to stay up for 10 o'clock p.m. games. That's one thing that they fight. That's not really, you know, any commissioner is going to deal with that. The other thing is the college football playoff expansion. Larry Scott made a push to expand it, especially in light of COVID. It wasn't taken seriously. But you know what? If USC had won all their games, had they not lost their conference championship game, it would have been a different argument. But basically, you know, Clemson's a one-trick pony in the ACC right now. Now, when Florida State's healthy, that's not the case. But basically, that conference is a one-trick pony. USC didn't carry that for them this year. And you know, they've got to have a school that can do that at least to give them some credibility to be more in the conversation for the college football playoff. Without it, the longer that conference goes without a representative, I believe Oregon, Indy Hawk, correct me if I'm wrong. No, Washington was in since Oregon. But again, we're talking 4 or 5 years ago. That conference has not had a representative in the college football playoff. So an expanded playoff, they've got to push for that. And frankly, I don't think it's a bad idea across the board anyway. And then the other one is player empowerment and rights. Now, you know, you have that name, image, likeness deal going on, which is kind of a poly sports issue as I'm talking here. But you know, some of the players there in the state of California, frankly, is messing things up. The NCAA doesn't know how to rule on some of this stuff. Congress is doing stuff. The Pac-12, because their players have some of these rights, or their states have given it, or the players have demanded some of this, they're going to have to take a front seat in this. They're going to have to take the lead, which is kind of scary in a way, because you don't like the idea of a liberal West Coast group telling us about things like revenue sharing for all players, but they've got to set the tone on how to make it equitable and feasible and, you know, across that board. And so that's what they're facing. And I'm not sure, you know, I don't know. It sounds like they don't feel Larry Scott was up to it, but can tell you this, if they go after Gene Smith from Ohio State, I can tell you Gene Smith's definitely not up to it. And now I don't think Gene Smith's a bad guy. I rank on some Ohio State stuff. Gene Smith seems like a pretty decent guy. He's probably wouldn't be a bad conference commissioner, but I think he's strong as Ohio State's athletic director, so I don't see him leaving. Speaking of Ohio State, Michigan has halted all sports activities, not just basketball, not just rest, all athletic activities for 14 days for new coronavirus strain. This is 4 days ago, so we're there 4 days into it. They got 10 days left. But says it's 50% more transmittable. It doesn't say how if they've had more tests. Now, they played last Friday night, their men's basketball team, and then they paused. So I don't know. I don't know what that's going to mean for their games. You're seeing more and more of that, though. You're seeing more cancellations. They may have to work some of this out. Now, again, some teams built in some conferences built in a buffer, but some didn't. Other conferences, Oklahoma beat Kansas the other night. Kansas's first three-game losing streak since 2013. Now, frankly, that's not the strongest basketball conference. So now this year they're a lot better, but it's traditionally not the strongest. So, you know, for them to have a three-game losing streak dating back to 2013 is kind of not representative of that conference has gotten stronger. Though. Baylor, obviously. Kansas is a decent team. There's some good teams in it, but three-game losing streak, that may not even doom Kansas in any way. Probably just drops them to a three or four seed. Back to Ohio State, Greg Madison. Indy Hawk will know this name and any Iowa fan. Greg Madison, whose son Brian played at Iowa back in the late 2000s, right up, I think his last year was 2008 maybe. Yeah, 2008 with Mitch King. Greg Madison is retiring as Ohio State's defensive coordinator. He's been around. He's coached multiple levels. He was at Michigan until 2019. Twice he was their defensive coordinator. He was a coordinator at Florida, Notre Dame, Western Michigan, and with the Ravens. I'm not sure he was defensive coordinator with the Ravens, but anyway, yeah, he's finally retiring. Good for him. Good career, good man, raised a good kid. So good luck to Greg Madison. Coach K, Duke University's Coach K. Yeah, that Coach K, the Coach K who coaches a team that's not in the top 25. Again, Duke, North Carolina, and Kentucky are not in the top 25 this week. Anyway, Coach K had to make a little apology. Evidently, being interviewed post-game or whatever, and then a student reporter named Jake Piazza asked him a question. He says, what's the team's next step forward after they lost last Saturday to Louisville? They missed multiple shots in the final minutes. Anyway, wasn't in the mood to answer. So Coach K said, yeah, why don't we just evaluate this game? I'm not into what our next step forward it is right now. He said it on a Zoom call, so of course it went viral. he then said, compared it to a scenario to Piazza exiting a difficult class and immediately being asked about his, quote, toughest test. He did say that Piazza made the trip from North Carolina to Kentucky for the game to Louisville. And it said Coach K called him when he got back to his apartment. Said the call was short, but his sincerity in his apology was genuine, and I appreciated the call in the end. Yeah, when coaches are having to make those calls, yeah, I have a feel. I sense a sabbatical coming up for Coach K. The last time Coach K took a sabbatical was the 93-94 season, I believe, or 94-95, when Duke didn't make the NCAA tournament. So he, quote, took a sabbatical for back surgery. Yeah, whatever. UCF has lost an athletic director, their only athletic director, Danny White, no relation to Danny White, who played quarterback for Dallas, no relation to Danny White, who played guitar and sang for the group Matt Bianco, who none of you probably know. But anyway, he's replacing Phil Fulmer, who announced his retirement last week. Fulmer, if you remember, was part of the firing of Coach Jeremy Pruitt, even though, quote unquote, he retired. Fulmer retired. Pruitt was just fired along with a bunch of other staff members. So White took over at UCF in 2015, brought in Scott Frost. He's been in the SEC as a senior associate athletic director at Ole Miss. Said the decision to leave UCF was a difficult one. Yeah, I'm sure the money in Knoxville is a little better. UCF's still not in that league, as I say. Here's what it leads to, though. They're not going to be, after what happened to Pruitt and after what happened in the previous, you know, when they had hired Greg Schiano and then didn't hire him, and after what Fulmer did and knowing that the specter, I bet you Josh Heupel from UCF, I am betting Josh Heupel from UCF becomes the next coach at Tennessee. Now, is he in that league yet? I don't know. He's not at this point. He has not lived up to the same level that Scott Frost did. He did have an undefeated regular season his first year, but each year since they've lost two or more games. They got blown out by BYU in their bowl game this year. So if Josh Heupel gets an opportunity to go to Tennessee, I don't see why he wouldn't take it. He loses some good players as well at UCF. They still have Dylan Gabriel, but Mackenzie Milton is leaving, as we talked about before, going, I believe, to Florida State. And he was the quarterback that led them to their undefeated seasons, regular seasons, and then their undefeated bowl, plus their bowl game this first year of their first undefeated season. So don't be shocked if Josh Heupel's name gets pulled into the Tennessee job. Just saying, because I really think Danny White's going to have trouble getting it. Everybody says, oh, the UCF job, the Tennessee job. Well, supposedly they've taken a run at multiple. They've taken a run at several Big Ten guys, supposedly P.J. Fleck and supposedly Matt Campbell from Iowa State. Supposedly Campbell turned him down previously. Welcome T. Bodie to the room. Welcome those that are on the phones as well. I believe Sue from New Mexico is on there. Brother Tommy, I see his number. And sister in Philly is on as well, I believe. And Mrs. Hank, as I said, over in Hank Haven, west of Electric Hankland Studios. Anyway, it's going to be tough for Tennessee to get a top name. And Josh Heupel may just be. Now, Tom Herman might be in the mix after getting dumped at Texas. I don't know, though. But don't be surprised if White takes Josh Heupel with him. Then don't be surprised if the city of Orlando has a Antifa-sized rally, negative rally afterward. Yeah, I mean, that's huge, actually. That is, in a sense, huge if they get both. I don't know that they will, so don't hold me to any of that. Don't say, hey, you said. I'm just saying it could happen. Don't be surprised if it does happen. That's my caveat to that. So, yeah, Josh Heupel, don't be surprised. Danny White, we know. So, college football's way too early 2021 All-America team has been released by ESPN, their version of it. There's a reason I'm going to tell this one, folks. Adieu to such stars as Devontae Smith, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, and Dayton Nixon. So they actually mentioned Davion Nixon on the ESPN site, talking about next year's American. Davion Nixon, the Hawkeye defensive tackle that has left early for the NFL draft. So they have their next year's team. They've got Sam Howell as their quarterback. Breece Hall is back on as an Iowa Cyclone. Chris Olave from Ohio State. I'm just going Big Ten here, folks. I'm just going to be honest on that one. Tyler Linderbaum, Iowa Hawkeye center, is their choice for center next year. Along the defensive side, it pretty much looks like the Clemson show on the line and everywhere else. T'Juan Mullen from Indiana in a quarterback, and Brandon Joseph from Northwestern at safety. So that's the ESPN way too early top 25, or All-America team. They have their way too early top 25 as well. They did give final rankings. You know, the college football playoff does that. Everybody always asks, where did we finish in the college football? We finished where we finished before the playoff. They don't release another poll after that. College football playoff committee does it. Why would they? They're done. They've had their champion. So the Hawkeyes finished wherever the Hawkeyes finished 15th there. That's where they ended. In the AP, the Hawkeyes finished 15th, up one notch. In the coaches, they finished up at 16, up one notch. Several teams dropped. Indiana, Florida, Coastal Carolina all had bowl game losses. Georgia, who beat Tennessee in their bowl game, I believe. No, I'm sorry. That was not. That was Texas A&M. Cincinnati jumped a spot in the AP, dropped two notches in the coaches. Go figure. So those are your polls. Notre Dame dropped out of the top four in the coaches poll, by the way. Stayed in the top four the coaches. They dropped out of the top four in the coach. No, they stayed in the top four and the coaches dropped out in the AP. Weird. Who knows why they do those things? They're human rankings, so don't pay them no never mind, as they say. Texas Tech quarterback Alan Bowman is going to be a graduate transfer. Alabama has officially named Doug Marrone as their offensive line coach. He's coming over from his firing with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah, Alabama, they're just hiring pro coaches all over the place. Clemson Tigers linebacker Mike Jones Jr., entering the transfer portal. Again, no relation. Gonzaga and Baylor are the top two in basketball poll, as usual. Texas basketball coach Shaka Smart tests positive for COVID-19. I thought Biden cured that. I thought I'd seen that Biden cured that. Maybe not. The NBA Players Union is discussing a possible All-Star game in early March. Who cares? I asked this before, but I ask it again. Now that Trump is no longer president, do the players still have to kneel or can they stand now? Just asking for a friend, as they say. Indoor dining. Well, we're going to talk about it in the politics side. Yes, we are. So let's get to politics. What the hell? Why not? Per the experts, alleged President Joe Biden, I'm just going to call him AP Biden for now, just to shorten it up. Alleged President Biden, AP Biden. Several experts say the Buy America plan of Biden will not work. He signed an executive order on Monday to boost federal purchases of American-made products to strengthen the U.S. manufacturing sector. Federal law already requires it, but waivers are available if U.S.-made products are too much. The AP Biden order will make it tougher to get a waiver, while also requiring more components inside finished products be American made. There will also be a new White House office enforcing the rules and making sure purchasing agencies don't cut corners. In other words, folks, we're growing government already. Someone said it might be good politics, but it's bad economics. It's not a job creating approach. That's Gary Hufbauer of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Says you kill downstream jobs in one of two ways. Either you make it more expensive, so less of the product is purchased, or you have a given amount of budget money and it's not available for other things. So something else gets shortchanged. You can't build as many miles of road when the price of components are higher. Actually, Buy America laws have been around since 1933. Believe it or not, 97% of federal goods purchased are assembled in the United States. Anyway, it doesn't set new targets, but it basically, it's just one of many things under Joe Biden that's alleged President Biden that aren't going to work. Indy Hawk points out a number I'm going to give you. In his first week now, he's got 37. Indy Hawk said 30-plus. He's got 37 executive orders in that first week, folks. 37! Some real goodies. Another item. This is a late one, so I'm going to break it in here. Arizona Republicans have voted to censure Cindy McCain and two prominent GOP officials who have found themselves crosswise with former President Donald Trump. Now, this is Yahoo's version of it. The reason I bring in Yahoo's version is because I have a Yahoo email account. So it says basically that they're symbolic. It's Cindy McCain, former Senator Jeff Flake, and Governor Doug Ducey. But it says it shows the party's foot soldiers are focused on enforcing loyalty to Trump, even in the wake of an election that saw Arizona inch away from its staunchly Republican roots. Party activists also reelected controversial chairwoman Kelly Ward, who's been one of Trump's biggest supporters, says it's delighted Trump's staunchest supporters and worried Republican insiders. See, that's the problem here, folks. We're talking about insiders and the swamp and the deep state. So, yeah, they voted to censor them. I don't know what it means. I have a hard time believing it means much of anything. But, hey, Yahoo says, you know. Speaking of elected President Biden, he did, as I said, set a new record during his campaign. Not talking about the executive board. According to his own party, it's not even a good record. Well, it's fine for them, but if the GOP were to do it, it threatens our democracy. Anywho, according to reports from Bloomberg News and Fox News, Goofy Joe broke a couple records in this past election cycle. He broke his former boss's record for total money raised, receiving over $1.5 billion. And while he could only accept $2,800 from individual donors, he also broke a record previously set by Mittens Romney in 2012. Mittens got $113 million in dark money. AP Biden got $108 million. No, $145 million, I'm sorry. Yeah, $145 million. Now, this is dark money. It's completely anonymous money given through various PACs. Includes what are called allegedly, in my nonprofit groups. By comparison, President Trump received $28.4 million. Allegedly, for AP Biden, $318.6 million came from donors who gave $200 or less. Which means, of course, a ton came from donors who gave directly to the DNC. By the way, election-wide, Dems received $326 million in dark money, GOP $148 million. Not to worry, though, as several Dems have bills on the table limiting dark money and, yeah, there's a caveat, and requiring dark money groups to reveal their donor lists. Yeah, the sheep's clothing that's covering that wolf actually comes in the form of limiting certain types of nonprofits to cease giving altogether. Think groups like NRA, National Right to Life Foundation, any Christian group. Yeah, they're going to be told they can't give at all. But here's the other thing. It also allows them to register voters and allow same-day voter registration nationwide. What could possibly go wrong with that? One sponsor of one of these bills had the gall to say it's necessary because voters faced gerrymandering and rampant voter suppression. I didn't say – this is just somebody else. Don't – trust me. That's somebody else. Do you know how – do you now understand the posturing by the left DNC media industrial complex? Pretending that the latest migrant caravans are, quote, being turned back. They're not being turned back. What they're doing is they're giving enough time for this stuff to pass. Then they allow the caravans across the line in time for the 2022 election cycle. Now, do you really see it? No, you don't? Okay, here's the next step, of course. It's using these migrant caravans to launder dark and or illegal money to garner the votes and show a donation trail. See what they do. Remember during the Gore Clinton re-election, or Clinton Gore re-election, where they raised like 180 $80,000 at a Buddhist monastery in California. It was a Buddhist nunnery. You know, Buddhists, vow of poverty. Yeah, they raised $180,000 in a luncheon. Same deal. They launder money. They just launder more of their dark money that way. They launder foreign money that way. So that's what this is. It's just another. These migrant caravans will come across in 2022. They'll be registered to vote the day they cross the line, and they will be given money to throw into a bucket, so to speak, to show up a trail of some kind. Why would this work? You're asking, why would this work? I hope you're asking, why would this work anyway? Well, in an administration that operates above board, and with the Federal Election Commission and the IRS and the Department of Justice all doing their jobs, it wouldn't work. Of course it wouldn't. But in an environment where you tell the apparatus its job, and you tell the apparatus how you want that job done, and you feel that you're above accountability and law, it can work just fine. That's why they're doing it. They're not doing it for anything that has to do with, oh, voter suppression. They already solved voter suppression. Mail ballots to anyone who gets in the way. That's how they solved voter suppression. So, yeah. And finally, for a guy who, along with his party, called President Trump a tyrant and a dictator, citing, among other things, executive orders, I gotta believe alleged President Biden is on pace to set another record for number of executive orders in a full term. However, I think he's going to be breaking it. So far, he's done 37. Who knows? He could break it before they get him out in favor of alleged Vice President Harris, whenever that pre-appointed time comes. As of yesterday, as I said, 37 in his first week. Well, not really. Let's cut to the chase. He hasn't signed 37. Well, okay. What he has signed, for the most part, are reversals of orders that were already put in place by President Trump. So in essence, he isn't drawing up or conceding anything. He's basically hitting the delete or the backspace button on work that's already been done by someone else. Yeah, don't ever let anyone tell you he always takes the long way. Now, if this guy gets it done just by poaching, or in this case, reverse poaching, the work of others. Remember, this guy mastered plagiarism all the way back in college. Now, again, if a law is passed or an executive order signed, we may erase that from history as well. But so let's take a look at two of these reversals. First is the southern border wall. Now, that was not only an executive order. There was a bill passed way back when that actually required construction. Much of the funding has been done, supplies paid for, as well as contract labor arranged. The other, of course, is the Keystone XL pipeline, which again has already begun construction with supplies, labor, infrastructure already in place. In both cases, hundreds, if not thousands, are immediately out of work. Supplies, materials, and equipment will, for a while at least, sit idle and lay dormant. So in just a week's time, not only has prior funding been flushed down the toilet, but we're adding to the unemployment rolls. Now, the irony here, of course, is that some of the construction unions that are involved in this backed this clown, at least on a national leadership level. Yeah, some of these people backed this clown. Which begs the question, where has that money been moved, or where will it be moved? Who's going to get it? And the other question is for those who have seen the video of AP Biden trying to put his pen back in his pocket before immediately selecting another pen from off the desk directly in front of him, or video of him explaining vaccine dose procurement and distribution. At what point does someone, anyone, step in and say that this is elder abuse? By the way, as far as executive order commentary goes, my favorite has got to be from Jim Hoff and Gateway Pundit on his Twitter. A couple of our listeners know Jim personally. I have met him. He was in the wedding party of a friend, a listener of ours, on the Gateway Pundit Twitter and his website. He signed an order banning the use of the term China virus. And as he astutely points out, Mr. Hoff points out, no idea how this actually affects the pandemic. Maybe better, though, as a response tweet, it says, a dictator signs 37 executive orders in 6 days, not a president. Oh, by the way, one of AP Biden's EOs has already been temporarily blocked. Yeah, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton filed a motion to invalidate AP Biden's halt on deportations for the next 100 days. He had a federal judge granted that motion. So there is that. Hey, staying somewhat on theme, the upcoming impeachment hoax for immediate past President Trump, which is slated to begin February 8th, will waste a ton of money. Lord only knows how much. As for a trial that even AP Biden knows is not going to end in conviction, Senate Majority Leader Chuckles the Clown Schumer knows it. But here's where it gets really good, coming from Chuckles. Chuckles says, only an impeachment trial will bring healing to the country. Seriously. Seriously. Chuckles knows it will not end in conviction, but healing can only be attained by bringing accountability and not sweeping it under the rug. And that America wants to get past this awful chapter in American history. He says it will be fair, but at a fast pace. He actually said that too. One of my Facebook friends put up a meme. It says, trusting Plastic Pelosi and Chuckles the Clown with the words fair trial is like downing a box of X-Lax than trusting a fart. I hate to sound that, but that's exactly what it is. I mean, hearing them say fair trial is like that's a nose grower right there, ain't it? Fair trial. Look, it's always tough to outdo Chuckles the Clown, but it's been done. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts has effectively said the impeachment trial is unconstitutional. He hasn't come out and said it, but he's effectively said it by saying he only presides over an impeachment trial of the President of the United States. The Senate, though, that bastion of constitutional law and procedure, has it handled. No, there will not be a Supreme Court justice presiding. Instead, we'll have none other than President Pro Tem of the Senate, Patrick Leahy, Democrat from Vermont, as the presiding judge. So much for even the appearance of impartiality. President Pro Tem, Senator Leahy has already said he would vote to convict, but he's going to preside. Not to mention that old Pat. Look, this dude's old enough to spell old with an E as in old English. Old Pat's already been hospitalized in the past couple days for not feeling well. But that guy's going to preside over our impeachment hoax trial. Good Lord. Georgia Democrat voters are reportedly already steaming mad at their two new senators, Democrats John Ossoff and Reverend Raphael Warnock. Seems they were promised $2,000 by the two during their respective candidacies leading up to the prefixed runoff elections on January 5th. Georgia Democrat, I say Democrat, Vito would know what I mean. Guy we used to know would say Democrat. Democrat Oscar Zaro told Mediaite that Biden only announced $1,400 checks, while the candidates continually promised $2,000. Per Zaro, Warnock and Ossoff made it a point to endorse and exclusively say $2,000 checks. A lot of the people in my district voted blue for two main reasons. One, Loeffler and Perdue denying us COVID relief while profiting millions themselves. And two, $2,000 checks. Now, at a campaign rally on January 4th, alleged incoming President Biden yelled, if you send John and the Reverend to Washington, those $2,000 checks will go out the door. Story of hope and decency for so many people who are struggling right now. Now, he didn't say that. He read that. He later said reelecting Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue would mean those checks will never get there. Democrat canvasser Rogelio Linares told Mediaite he feels, quote, like shit. unquote, over the issue and calls it, quote, a betrayal of the working class. Linares added, I was lying to people that were relying on this. At the time, I didn't know it was a lie, but that was not the reality. Now, of course, people start parsing this stuff. Others were saying, well, remember, they were already voted 600 and they're going to get an additional 1400. Some said if David Perdue really wanted $2,000 relief checks, he'd be on the floor of the Senate demanding McConnell put it up to 2,000 instead of the 600. But they say the campaign message was clear. $2,000 checks. Now, ironically, AOC and other squad members like Ilhan Omar have also ranked on the move. They believe the $2,000 should come. Fox News voter analysis conducted on the runoff elections found 43% of Georgia voters viewed the coronavirus pandemic as the country's most important issue, and said 72% said they felt Congress had done too little. Now, due to those wins, Ossoff and Warnock, Democrats with two independent senators who caucus with them, have a 50-50 split vote in the Senate, with alleged Vice President Kamala Harris representing the tie-breaking vote. Do you know what that means? There are actually only 48 Democrat senators. There are two that are independents that caucus with them. Now, they say also that Democrat West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin would absolutely not vote for $2,000 checks, but that it could still pass on minor Republican support. Folks, that's not going to happen. Yeah. So Democrats are already mad about the giveaways. So for them, I play this classic tune from the movie This is Spinal Tap. Please listen. A classic from Spinal Tap. Tell you what, if you've never seen the movie, you got to see it. It's called This is Spinal Tap. Rob Reiner, who sucks as a human being, but is great as a director, directed it with Michael McKean and Christopher Guest and Harry Shearer as the three main members of Spinal Tap. Oh, as Michael McKean points out at one point, over the years, there have been 47 different members of Spinal Tap. Yeah, all their drummers keep dying. Anyway, they did that song called Gimme Some Money. It was one of their early hits, so to speak. It's not a real band. One of their early hits in the movie. Catch the movie, because Gimme Some Money is so perfect for what's happening right now. Now, on the Keystone Pipeline, I had texted a friend of mine who has worked in and around the industry, in energy industry, over the years. He made a point. I asked him the impact on the pipeline. He made a good point. He said our oil, meaning from Canada, will arrive in Houston area for refining. 90% plus of the line is already built. There's just missing a few miles in Nebraska. It'll keep rolling to Texas on rail for some more years. Friendly Gramps Warren Buffett will keep making excess money on his railroad. In other words, yeah, see, a lot of the stuff is symbolic, but some of it's not. It's still affecting jobs. But it's not going to say, you know, what they're hoping to do is make the U.S. dependent on oil from other countries. Why? I have no idea. But anyway, Democrat voters in Georgia are upset that they're not getting their $2,000 checks. Morons. Just after last week's sham inauguration took place, Amazon suddenly became very helpful, offering the alleged administration help with distribution of the COVID vaccine. Dave Clark, CEO of Amazon's worldwide consumer business. No, not Dave Clark of the Dave Clark Five. I say that because I just played a song. Anyway, Dave Clark, CEO of Amazon's worldwide consumer business, said Amazon is ready to leverage all their operations, information technology, and communications capabilities and expertise to assist in the administration's vaccination efforts. Clark said Amazon's scale allows them to make a meaningful impact immediately in the fight against COVID-19. When asked by several news outlets why they are suddenly now offering their help, an Amazon spokesman pointed out that they had been in contact with the previous administration and cited a letter from Clark in December. Except one thing, that letter had nothing to do with offering Amazon's help. Basically, that letter was reiterating previous communication between Amazon and the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP. Basically, that communication basically said Amazon workers at their fulfillment centers, their AWS data centers, and Whole Foods Market stores should receive the COVID-19 vaccine at the earliest appropriate time. So now, in addition to campaign money, dark, above board, legal, illegal, or otherwise, we now know that while Donald Trump was president, Amazon's main concern appeared to be getting preferential treatment in vaccination of its workers. Now, suddenly, they're all set to provide their logistics and their operations and their IT, et cetera, to distribute the vaccine ASAP. Does this not scare anybody? If Amazon really thought they could have helped, why were they not shouting it from the rooftops? Seriously, this is not only disingenuous on their part, it's potentially criminal, or at a minimum, it's morally and ethically bankrupt. President Trump and his administration worked, literally, as the name implied, literally at warp speed to get a vaccine out to public distribution. They took untold amounts of misdirected and misguided, not to mention absolutely false, blame from the left DNC media industrial complex for their COVID-19 response, often in the face of outright hypocrisy from those same people, not to mention lies. Now, all of a sudden, when some of these same people offer their magnanimous help, we're supposed to, one, thank them, two, not question their lack of immediacy or urgency, and three, believe that these people and these businesses can be trusted to run all but monopolistic businesses in the interests of the American people. By the way, remember all those previous calls to break up the tech giants, the social media companies, and the other behemoths? Remember when that was all of paramount importance? Not hearing much now, are we? All of a sudden, the left DNC media industrial complex is applauding the suspension or termination of social media accounts of President Trump or new Georgia Republican House Rep Marjorie Taylor Greene or MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. Yeah, the flimsy at best justification that they give, whether it's the rhetoric or for fact-checking or whatever, it only furthers their agenda, and it further points furthers the point of conservatives and constructionists and constitutionalists that media and big tech censorship, isn't about safety or uniform standards. Now, when Antifa or BLM can run free while out at the same time censoring any opposing viewpoint, we don't have the equality or the equity that they claim to hold so dear. When rioters and looters for one viewpoint are said to be exercising their rights, while any opposing viewpoint, even on a much smaller scale, is, quote, a threat to our democracy, we have the classic double standard. If we're just talking about op-ed pages or editorial opinions on one of those TV networks, fine. Because in those cases, we're told up front that it's a viewpoint, not a fact or a sole truth. But when, on the other hand, those companies, in concert with various government types, are using it and doing it to suppress any dissenting viewpoint, they aren't talking about equity or equality or even First Amendment rights. We're talking about government-approved and probably even government-sponsored censorship. Yeah, we better not keep hearing about voter suppression or incitement of this or need for gun control ever if those who control much of this technology and media and business infrastructure are allowed to suppress anyone or anything that they disagree with solely on ideology. If they're going to be stupid enough to impose one set of standards on the group with whom they disagree while virtually promoting the same or worse rhetoric from those with whom they do agree, they better be prepared for a day of reckoning. Look, people will put up with a lot of crap for the freedoms of this country. They will. People will put up for the freedoms that we have in this country. People will put up with a lot of crap. They'll put up with even a little more if you throw some free stuff at some people. But I'll tell you what, people of principle, people who believe in this country and the tenets on which it was founded, they will not put up with enslavement. As long as these people are allowed to get away with this, yeah, enslavement is exactly what we face. Okay, in a move that will definitely not endear her to her Democrat colleagues, former Democrat presidential candidate and U.S. representative from Hawaii, Tulsi Gabbard, sent out a series of tweets and videos the other day saying that John Brennan's, the Adam Schiff's, and the big tech oligarchs taking away civil liberties are, quote, also domestic enemies and much more powerful. Ms. Gabbard also called on AP Biden and Congress to denounce the effort. Here in part is what she said. She said, the mob who stormed Congress to try to stop Congress from carrying out its constitutional responsibilities were behaving like domestic enemies of our country. But let us be clear. The John Brennans, Adam Schiff's, and the oligarchs in big tech who are trying to undermine our constitutionally protected rights and turn our country into a police state with KGB-style surveillance are also domestic enemies and much more powerful and therefore dangerous than the mob who stormed the Capitol. Yeah, she did not pull any punches on that one, did she? Yeah, basically, a couple things here. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, said Biden administration basically took 2 days before they said they're going to investigate domestic terrorism in the United States. Announced it on the 22nd as a result of the investigation, connecting it to the investigation on January 6th. She said, Gabbard said, Biden and Congress needs to denounce all these efforts, and that the United States will be in great danger if people do not stand up to them. He says, I denounce, she says, President Biden, I call upon you and all of Congress from both parties to denounce efforts by Brennan and others to take away our civil liberties endowed to us by our Creator and guaranteed in our Constitution. If you don't stand up to them now, then our country will be in great peril. She included a segment of an interview by former CIA Director John Brennan from MSNBC or MSDNC on January 20th. Here's what Brennan said. I know looking forward that the members of the Biden team who have been nominated or have been appointed are now moving in laser-like fashion to try to uncover as much as they can about what looks like very similar to insurgency movements that we've seen overseas, where they germinate in different parts of the country and they gain strength and it brings together an unholy alliance frequently of religious extremists, authoritarians, fascists, bigots, racists, nativists, even libertarians. John Brennan said that. Here is what's so scary about Brennan and Psaki in their statement. They literally encompass any and all dissent. In addition to that, there's some slight manipulation of the facts. First, it's not clear that any one group or person led the incursion into the Capitol. As Vito and Al said the other day, if they're going to call that an insurrection, folks in places like Zimbabwe, folks in places like China, Chechnya, they're saying, hold our beer. Like I said, it's not clear. Here's another one that's worse in a sense to me. They talk about the five deaths that occurred. Exactly two of those were a result of that, quote, incursion. The other three were termed medical. They occurred outside the Capitol. They were not part of the incursion. They had nothing to do with it. And of the two that did occur, one might be termed a suspicious death in that there was no apparent reason to single out that victim for behavioral or threat reasons. Thus, some have posited the idea, I'm not saying one way or the other, but some have posited the idea that she may have been shot and killed in order to cover up any persons or groups that may have set things up behind the scenes in advance. Things like Nancy Pelosi and the House Sergeant at Arms or whatever, refusing increased Capitol Police protection, not requesting National Guard protection beforehand, initially asking them to stand down. If you remember, the mayor of D.C. was going to shutter businesses, etc. That suddenly didn't happen. The disturbances that took place around D.C. that pulled police away from that area, those kind of things. Almost as if on cue, by the way. Yeah, this happened today. Department of Homeland Security issued a terror alert over anti-government extremists. I'm just going to read this. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security declared a nationwide terrorism alert Wednesday, citing the potential threat from domestic anti-government extremists opposed to Joe Biden as president. Information suggests that some ideologically motivated violent extremists with objections to the exercise of governmental authority and the presidential transition, as well as other perceived grievances fueled by false narratives, could continue to mobilize to incite or commit violence, the department said. Yeah, no individual speaking up. The National Terrorism Advisory System Bulletin said a heightened threat of attack, quote, will persist in the weeks following the successful presidential inauguration, which took place on January 20th. I wouldn't call it successful. Then it says, DHS does not have any information to indicate a specific credible plot, it said, but they're issuing a nationwide terrorism alert over something that has no specific credible plot. says, however, violent riots have continued in recent days, and we remain concerned that individuals frustrated with the exercise of governmental authority and the presidential transition could continue to mobilize a broad range of ideologically motivated actors to incite or commit violence. The alert said there had been mounting threats since last year from domestic violent extremists motivated by COVID-19 restrictions, Biden's alleged defeat of Donald Trump in the November election, police brutality, and illegal immigration. It says more than 150 people, including members of armed extremist groups, have been arrested since the attack, which has been branded as an insurrection. The department urged the public to report suspicious activity and threats of violence. Good God, people, did they not see violence, insurrection, threats of this, threats of that, all last spring and summer? Did they not see mayors and governors telling police to stand down? Did they not in Orlando see the chief of police and the sheriff kneel in solidarity with the protesters? Did they not? And now suddenly they're concerned. Yeah. Portland, on some of these rioters, by the way, Portland rioters damaged an ICE building, and police declared, quote, unlawful assembly. This is Portland. When Portland police are declaring unlawful assembly, what would real police call it? Yeah, this is the night of the alleged successful inauguration. ICE rioters were throwing rocks and eggs. And then it says, and vandalizing the building. I would say throwing rocks and eggs is vandalizing the building. And that's a good point. Mrs. Hank says at least they weren't wasting toilet paper. Portland police chief said, we have observed property damage to the building. Hey, good observation. But anyone who is involved in criminal behavior, including vandalism and graffitiing, is subject to arrest or citation. I would like a ruling. Is graffitiing a word? Is it an actual form of the word graffiti? Because graffiti, I'm going to double check, but I'm pretty sure graffiti, when it shows up on my computer screen, when I type it in here, okay, it's a noun, not a verb. Graffitiing is not a real word. But evidently, they've been doing that in Portland. They've been graffitiing. So stay away from Portland if graffitiing offends you. Good God, this guy has been our alleged president for a week. Yeah, oh, that's another thing. The doomsday calendar. You know, they have that doomsday calendar. It's, I don't know who maintains it. I don't care. But yeah, I saw somewhere the doomsday calendar got accelerated. You know why, though? Climate change. Climate change. Oh, here's some good news. Pamela Anderson's off the market again. She secretly married her bodyguard. Says, everyone we know is happy for us. I'm not sure who. Supposedly at her home on Christmas Eve. Wedding number 26 or 7. I don't know. Yeah. Graffitiing. Graffitiing is happening in Portland. Yeah, the doomsday clock's been moved up. And I just saw Cloris Leachman has passed away at the age of 94. May she rest in peace. Wow, 94. The GOP is pushing back on Biden's climate-forward orders. see how far that goes. Head of the U.S. Bishops Conference warns Biden would advance moral evils and threaten human life. Really? Really? Yeah, I think so. So yeah, that's the kind of the fun stuff that's happening. Oh, these are the couple things I want to talk about. Now, several U.S. cities have suddenly announced plans to lift restrictions on indoor dining. California being one of them. And we've heard Governor Cuomo saying we need to open up the economy. He's also calling for major tax increases, tax hikes in the state of New York if they don't get the bailout money he wants. But several U.S. cities and states have announced plans to lift restrictions on indoor dining less than a week after the inauguration, the allegedly successful inauguration. Notes that many are in blue states. Says it's expected to give local economies a boost during the early days of the Biden administration. Following months of business strangling shutdowns while President Trump was in charge. Even that, they can't word it properly or say it properly or honestly. Biden has already signed executive orders intended to provide food assistance to low-income families and protect workers' rights during the pandemic. It's already been done, folks. We've already done those things. Now, the president, previous president, the rightful president, preferred to allow states to make their own decisions, as he should. But in Illinois, indoor dining was expected to resume last Saturday in Chicago and Cook County suburbs. Still only getting 25% capacity or 25 people per room, provided local infection rates stay the same or improve. That comes as Chicago shifts from Tier 2 to Tier 1 restrictions under Democrat Governor J.B. Pritzker. Yeah, people are doing this. California is doing it. Now, Governor Gruesome Newsom said he was not doing this in response to lawsuits or his possible recall petition. You know what? One of them knows something? I believe him. I actually believe him. He's not doing it in response to that. You know what he's doing it in response to? The perception that it will help the economy under Joe Biden. Starting January 22nd, the mayor of D.C., Uriel Bowser, allowed indoor bar and restaurant service to resume. California, though, has now withheld its previous ruling. Before, they said it was based on science. When they were asked to produce that science, they withheld it. When they were asked again to produce the science that allowed for reopening of restaurants and bars, they're still withholding it. Now, Michigan, they're doing it in Detroit and other cities on February 1st. Baltimore, it resumed last Friday, the 22nd. 25% for indoor, 50% for outdoor, with customers facing a one-hour time limit for their sit-down meals. So, yeah, suddenly everything's opening up again. And now in Michigan, they're not doing it, as I said, until February 1st. But guess who made that lift? Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Want to know what she recently served on? Alleged President Biden's inauguration committee. Yeah, folks. I mean, we knew this was going to happen. We knew they were going to lift this stuff. We knew that Joe was going to claim this. But really, we've really witnessed the politicization of a virus. But more than that, we've witnessed destruction of an economy, a lot of which will never recover. This is frightening. Unbelievable that this is happening this quickly. Yeah, I'm hacked off. You all should be hacked off. I would say don't go to restaurants in those places. But that's not fair. That's not fair to those restaurants or those bars. Certainly not. But man, I mean, seriously, 2 days after inauguration, that stuff happens? 2 frigging days. Okay, folks, it's 6 minutes to top up, so I'm done for the night. I've said what I need to say. I hope you've listened. I hope I've made it coherent. I hope I have brought you the information that needs to be heard, certainly. But man, you know what? This, we cannot back down. We cannot sit back and say, oh, well, there's not much we can do now. That is wrong answer. Number one, we have elections again in 2022. We need to primary the Republicans that voted to impeach President Trump. We need to primary even some senators, maybe. But remember, David Valadao in California, Adam Kinzinger in Illinois, Pete Meyer and Fred Upton in Michigan, John Katko in New York, Anthony Gonzalez in Ohio, Tom Rice in South Carolina, Jamie Herrera-Butler and Dan Newhouse in Washington, and Liz Dr. Zayas Cheney of Wyoming. We need to primary them, folks. Those people voted for this sham impeachment that's coming up. But worse than that, they voted to try and stab a knife deeper into the back of our president. So remember that. Those 10. David Valadao, Adam Kinzinger, Peter Meyer, Fred Upton, John Katko, Anthony Gonzalez, Tom Rice, Jamie Herrera-Butler, Dan Newhouse, and Liz Cheney. If you're in their districts, you need to primary them. But you also need to tell them daily, if possible, what have you done in the best interest of the American people this week or this day in Congress? Get them on the record. Get them on the carpet. Indy Hawk says, keep fighting. Oh, that's right. We can't say that. Yeah, we can. Remember, you still have constitutional rights, and as long as you do, exercise them. Y'all have a good week. Have a great weekend. Got some good basketball coming up Friday with the Hawkeyes and the Illini. And like I said, I'm not going to speak one way or the other. If you're excited about the vaccine, go out and get it. If you're not, don't go out and get it. Don't rank on people that get it. Don't rank on people that don't, because remember, it's a personal thing. God bless America, nonetheless, right? Absolutely. Y'all have a good week. Have a good night, folks. We'll talk at you next week. Be safe. Good night. And by gosh, I want to thank, you know what, we're going to cut off. I want to thank Indy Hawk and T. Bodie that were here in the chat room. Sue from New Mexico, I believe, was in our call listeners, along with T. Bodie. Brother Tommy, big sister. Hawkeye Mike was in for a bit. Hawkeye Mike, hope he's okay. He had a little stuff going on today, so hope everything's okay with him. Thank you all for being here. Have a great week, folks. We'll talk to you all later. Thank you. Good night, folks.